Hello, dear listener. Hope you are an Android developer. My name is Artem Zinotilin, and today we are starting a new podcast for Android developers. We called it The Context. Yep, that context that every Android developer knows and probably hates Android SDK for such design. Our guest today, and actually he helped with podcast name and some other decisions, is Hannes Dorfman, aka Soki. Or Sokai, it's his nickname on GitHub and Twitter, and I'm not sure I'm spelling that correctly, I'm sorry. So let me introduce Hannes to you, I mean who he is from my point of view, and then he'll correct me if I didn't mention something or made a mistake. So Hannes is an Android developer who I knew as a reader of his blog posts and a user of some of his libraries for at least a year, I guess. The most known open source projects from Hannes for me are Parcelable Please, I love that name, which is annotation processor for generating parcelable implementation for your classes. So I have to say that currently I'm more using AutoParcel for that, but some time ago I used Parcelable Please and it worked really great for me. Another one is FragmentArcs, which is also annotation processor for generating builders and creators for fragments. You can specify some required or optional arguments via annotations. Also, as a disclaimer, I'm not a fan of fragments and I hope Hannes too, but we still use them, so yeah. Another library is actually more like a framework for me. It's called MozBe. You probably remember that huge article mentioned in Android Weekly called Ted Mosby Software Architect, where Hannes describes his vision of MVP in Android and introduced a library called Mosby, which can help you build an app in MVP style. By MVP, I mean not the minimal viable product, but model view presenter pattern. Also, I know about SQLBrite Dev library from Hannes, which adds type-safe object mapping to SQLBrite. Also, Hannes is just a good and kind person from my perspective. His libraries have good set of tests, and his code is clean and easy to read, so definitely follow him on Twitter and check his GitHub. Hannes, did I make any mistakes?
No, you said everything fine, but there are some things or some remarks about my name. It's Soke Kui, Kuvi. Soke
Kui.
Actually, I don't know how to pronounce it anyway. But apart from that, everything is right.
I usually want to pronounce it like socket and then add Kui.
Yeah, the origin of this name is that I'm a lazy person and the keys Ku, W, E are the first one in the left top corner. And usually I took that name, but that name was already taken by someone else. And then I have to look for something else. And then I stared down as I was sitting on my chair and I saw my socks. And basically Socke means socks in German. So I added that as prefix.
Nice. I'm not that creative. I'm just Artem Zinotilin everywhere.
And one thing I should also mention is that one of the libraries you have mentioned, FragmentArcs, is just a fork of Hugo Visser's bundle project. So he has an annotation processor for saving activity state into the bundle and also to do some fragment arcs kind of things. And I forked that and improved it. And yeah. But somehow we have decided to not merge it into his original bundle project. So it's a standalone library just for the fragment arcs.
Thanks. So, Hannes, let's discuss things we want to discuss. And actually, I wanted to mention that when I initially wanted to start this podcast 2 or 3 weeks ago, I really wanted to invite Hannes as a very first guest because he has big experience with MVP. As far as I know, you build apps in MVP style from 2013. But a couple days after I invited him and we decided to mainly discuss MVP in first episode, our friendly podcast called Fragmented published an episode with Israel Ferrer, Akaralat, where they discussed MVP. So we had to change our main topic just to not talk about same things again and again. So our first topic is architecture of modern Android apps, which just includes things like MVP, but also many others. So, Hannes, how do you see and actually do architecture of Android apps you are working on?
as you already have said, mainly I use MVP and I'm a fan of the MVP pattern. Mm-hmm. But I think there are also other design patterns we should discuss briefly, or at least say what are the advantages or disadvantages to better understand why at least I use MVP.
Mm-hmm.
In general, software architecture is a topic that is, I don't know, it's people might think that an app is just an app. There's no rocket science there, so it doesn't really need a software architecture. At least I have these feelings from time to time. The way I see software architecture is like body cells. So in your human body, we have these cells, and the human body is replacing cells from a few days to 2 years. So basically, every day you wake up and have a lot of cells replaced by other newer cells, or cells have mutated to a next generation, and so on and so forth. And basically, that's all about software architecture. So in software architecture, you want to have components that act like cells. You want to replace them without destroying the other body, the human body. And I think that's something you should try to achieve. So cells in the body are decoupled, cells have different concerns or different responsibilities, and that's exactly what you should try to achieve with a software architecture in general. Not Android related, but in general. You should build cell-alike components. So why is software architecture actually so hard? So I believe, or I agree with Robert C. Martins, which is better known as Uncle Bob, who said that the number of programmers doubles every 5 years. Which on the other hand means that every 5 years, the half of our programmers in our industry have less than 5 years of experience. And I think that's the main reason why software architecture is so hard, because the most of the software architecture patterns we're going to discuss in this episode are already there for years. And basically, we are making, in the Android world, the same mistakes others have made years ago, because we didn't learn from that mistakes others have made before. For instance, there's the model view controller thing, MVC, which has his origins in 1979 and was invented by Rainscout. But the idea of model view controller was entirely different from what we now use model view controller. In model view controller, there was basically every UI element has a controller, basically a click listener. If you have a checkbox, then you have a controller which reacts on this click and updates your model. If you have a button, then you have a controller which was a click listener. If you have a text feed and you change the text, then it was a controller who was observing the text changes. And now think how we Android developers interpret model view controller. We interpret mostly the activity or the fragment as controller for the whole screen. So if I have a UI element in the 1970s, it has a controller. If I have a screen today in Android, it has a huge controller with 10,000 lines of code called activities, unmaintainable. And yeah, so I guess we both agree in that model view controller is not really an architecture, but was meant for something entirely different. But those things happen in history quite often, that things were named with the same name and probably used some kind of, in some different kind of way, not in initially or originally was intended to.
Right. But I'd say that model view controller is really applicable to web applications where, I mean, not the client side, but backend side, when the controller is just a receiver for example, HTTP requests, he decides what model to invoke and how to return the result and so on. In Android and similar platforms, actually activities and fragments mix the view and controller. But I guess if SDK will be designed in a manner where activity won't have direct access to the views and so on, we will really be able to use activities as controllers, I guess, and separate things for views.
Well, I'm not 100% sure if this is true, because I believe if we just would use plain view groups like frame layout and so on and so forth instead of fragments, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that the most Android beginners will put all their code in that class instead of a dedicated controller. And we also see the same thing in the iOS world. In the iOS world, they are trained to use this view controller class. us, but they do pretty the same thing as we do with activities. You put all the controllers in one view controller, like a click listener, like a on-scroll listener, and so on and so forth. It's all in the view controller, along with the lifecycle controlling thing. If you take, for example, Swing applications, let's stay with Swing because it's Java-related, or AVT. If you build a desktop application, then you also have this JFrame. You don't have this framework that already provides you that architecture that you have some model view present or the model view view model built in. So it comes basically with just the UI. Then it's up to you, the developer, to apply a software architecture. And I'm pretty sure the first GUIs we have built with Swing or AVT, we put also everything in the JFrame class. And we had huge unmaintainable JFrame classes. But then somehow we realized that that pattern doesn't work that good and moved code into other components. Yeah, that's basically what I mean with the lack of experience in the Android world. They have already committed that this was a problem in the Java world in the 2000s, and now in Android in 2016, we are still seeing a lot of applications built in that kind of way. But
yeah, I agree.
Probably. So I don't think that's a platform issue or SDK issue. The SDK or the platform might be a little bit advanced at this point, but I think at the end it's the programmer who should apply software architecture. Then there's the model view view model, which basically is for lazy people like me because it uses a data binding engine, so you don't have to write that much code. So the model view model was basically used by Microsoft, and I have used it with Windows phones.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm not sure about you, but I have the feeling that the model view model implementations I've seen in Android are, and not entirely different, but misses some key features that the Windows phone counterpart has.
The reason for that is because C# has events on a language side, I guess.
Exactly.
It doesn't need data binding library or something. It already in the frameworks and language itself.
Yeah, that's true. But I think some key points like comments are entirely missing in the Android model view view model implementation, but I think they are important to separate the input to your view model from your view actually.
But I also should say that I wasn't such a fan of MVVM when I worked on Windows Phone projects, because I mean, you starting mixing code in C# files and XML, and that feels like a lot of magic for me because I don't understand when it's gonna break at runtime or.
Yeah, I have exactly the same feeling. So it's, I don't think that model view model scales well. I think it works good for a very, very simple screen or for a very, very simple application. Probably you could compare it with having a tent. So you have a tent, but nowadays you want to build a skyscraper. And I don't think that model view model works that good for that kind of things. For instance, in the model view model, what do you do? Or in Windows Phone, what do you do if you want to display a progress bar? While you're loading data and then display the real content and so on and so forth. So what I have seen others have done on Android is to make some kind of Boolean observable and then change the visibility of this progress bar and so on and so forth. But that was actually not the initial intention of model view view model. In model view view model, every UI component, or at least UI group, should have its own view model. So again, you shouldn't have a view model for your home screen. You should have a view model for your recycler view. You should have a view model for your progress bar. But that also in the Windows Phone world, they didn't do that right, at least from my point of view. For instance, with the progress bar, when they started, they just did the data binding to the, let's say, recycler view, and then updated the recycler view. And when they wanted to display a progress bar, they basically instantiated a progress bar manually and set that visibility to visible and gone in your view model. So basically they have shifted all the ugly spaghetti code into the view model, and it doesn't look like spaghetti code because there is less code because there's data binding in there, but it's still spaghetti code because there were two or three functions or methods that had change the state of the progress bar. So the right way would be that the progress bar has its own view model. But that would also mean that the view model from the progress bar and the view model from the recycler view would have to share some common business logic. And that was the point where model view model controller has started in the .NET framework. So basically they have put a controller at the end, and the controller was shared between multiple view models and then retrieved the model or manipulated the model. That's the thing where have already mentioned before, this lack of experience leads to unclear software architecture because, as I already said, the many model view view model implementations I've seen on GitHub for Android and so on miss that controller part, miss that command part, and so on and so forth. So they also introduced lifecycle to the view models, and I don't think that that's an architecture. That's basically shifting your activity spaghetti code to the view model.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But there's a quite a good project on GitHub by Julio Bedek and his company. I think we should add that link to them because it's, from my point of view, the cleanest implementation of an MVVM on Android, at least what I've seen so far. It's based on Eric's Java, not on the data binding, but I think you can translate it or get the concept behind it to get a good starting point if you really want to work with model view, view model. And I also have to say that using data binding doesn't automatically mean that you are using MVVM.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'd say that for the person who didn't use MVVM before, you should start just a little bit with data binding if you want. For example, change the color or something, just a view attribute, not bringing much logic to it because it may blow up unexpectedly and you have to spend time to figure out how to achieve the architecture you want to achieve. Because when I worked on Windows Phone project, huge problem as far as I remember, it was several years ago, was, for example, displaying different types of items in the list. It was just a hell in MVVM. I guess in Android with data binding, you may find similar problems. You can mix data binding and MVP or MVC or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And I also dislike that trend in Android development to put more and more logic into the XML layout files.
Yeah, definitely. So you can test.
Yeah, you can test it. There might have some good things or good reasons to do that. For instance, there was the one from Lisa Ray to add custom fonts to a text.
Yeah, right.
So for that kind of things, it makes sense. But again, I think that putting part of your code into XML is not a good idea and doesn't scale. So as I already said before with MVVM, I think it doesn't scale if you have to build the next generation of yourself to be with the human body thing I've started. But that's also in the AngularJS scene. I have noticed that they are doing the same thing with the progress bar. They are basically adding a kind of interceptor. You can imagine they have their HTTP client, like OKHTTP, they add an interceptor, and then they increment the count and decrement the count once the request is over, it has been completed. And basically, they display a progress bar on top of it. So they also use the MVVM model, not in that clean way as it should be. At least not everybody, but I have seen a lot of sample projects which do something like that. Yeah, that was just to sum it up from MVVM. So
you decided to build your apps based on MVP, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the main reason why I'm not using MVVM is because, yeah, as I already said, it doesn't scale that good. And one thing that it's really a problem for me is screen orientation thing. Because with MVP, I have the chance to retain the presenter, even though it's not the main responsibility of the presenter to do that. But in Mosby, you can retain the presenter along screen orientation. So you basically just attach the view and detach the view and reattach the landscape view again.
Mm-hmm. So you use that, right? Because I don't.
I use that not everywhere, but most of the time I use it, and it makes things much easier. That's basically also what Mosby provides you. If you want to, you don't have to, but you can use that thing to retain the presenter. But that's not the main reason. The main reason why I use MVP is because for me it's the passive view variant of MVP makes so much more sense to me, because there you have the presenter who is responsible to coordinate the view. So the typical view every one of us, I guess, has already implemented is something like displaying a progress bar while loading data from the backend, then displaying the recycler view with the items loaded, or display an error view or something like that in case that the backend has thrown an error or no internet connection. Doing that with model view view model, as I already said, would require some lot of extra code and some controller that coordinates all three states or one big huge view model that controls that thing. But with MVP, there's basically the presenter responsible for that. That makes the code much, much cleaner to read and easier to test. But with MVP, there is also some kind of problem, because the original idea of MVP was to get the model and then transform the model to a presentation model, which is optimized for your view. So basically, you get, I don't know, an item, and then you transform it to a presentation model item. And this presentation model item has already the all pre-computed things in there, and then the presenter hands this presentation model to the view. So the view basically just have to display it like that. It doesn't have to compute anything. There's already all information in the presentation model that the view needs to display it properly.
Mm-hmm. So let me just ask one thing. The model for you is kind of entity, right? And not the logic.
Yes, so that's a little bit misleading. So when I say model, I basically think about business logic, domain model, something like that. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if you, I guess we all use Retrofit, or the most of us has at least heard of Retrofit. So if you use a Retrofit to make an HTTP call, so the presenter has that reference to Retrofit. So Retrofit will then provide a callback, might be RxJava, might be something else. And the presenter gets then the result as callback. And in this callback, there might be a list of items, and then it transforms that list of items to a list of presentation model items. It may not be necessary to do that for everything and everywhere, but there are some use cases where that definitely makes sense and your code much cleaner, especially when working with RxJava. If you are familiar with the clean architecture from Uncle Bob, that is basically model view presenter sitting on top of some interactors and use cases and entities which made the business logic, I would say, the domain logic.
Right.
What about you? Do you have a different understanding of MVP, because there are many interpretations of MVP as well?
So I'd say that I have kind of different understanding of model, because in each of these patterns, MVC, MVP, MVPM, we have that model. Model for me is, I came from backend development where models usually are kind of classes that handles business logic, for example, storing something to the database or converting some data from one format to another. And so let's say we have user model, and user model has method register user, which may, for example, do HTTP requests. So presenters don't know about concrete things like Retrofit or something. They know about model and sometimes kind of interactors when I need to convert things from one format to another. And model is kind of proxy for business logic and can be used in presenters or, for example, even in other models. So model for me is not entity. For example, user is entity. User model is class where you can do some business logic with the user. So that's how I...
Yeah, I agree. No, I didn't mean that the model is just Retrofit or something like that. There should definitely be an interactor or an interface or a class, at least, between the presenter and your real business logic as the kind of gateway or port you talk to. And then, yeah, then it a little bit depends how many layers you want to add, if you want to add interactors, use cases, or use the repository pattern. So that personal preference here on how far or how many layers you want to add. But yeah, in general, M in model view presenter or the M in model view model is a little bit misleading, because it might be an entity or it might be an interactor or a business logic or something behind it.
Yeah, I'm curious why it's not called business logic.
It will for me
simplify things so much.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. But there are also other things where it could be also just a single entity, probably. For instance, lately I have begun some kind of mentorship here in Munich with a small startup. They basically have read my blog and liked it somehow. They have Android developer who started to program their app, but he's no knowledge of Android at all, no experience. And he's a AngularJS developer. Mm-hmm. And the first thing, or one of the first things he has asked me is, how do I apply a presenter to a view holder? How to apply MVP to a view holder? And that's so true. That's definitely the same thing that I have mentioned before. Why do we don't should have a controller on a controller in MVC for the whole screen? We should separate our big view into smaller views. And I definitely do that also with recycler view holders. But the problem with recycler view holders and that's the reason why it's not part of MOSPI, is that they were recycled, and then you might have to recycle the presenters too, or things get really tricky if you want do some async background work triggered from a view holder. But it makes sense, for instance, to observe a database like your Story.io, which supports Rx Java and pushes updates through the Rx observable chain. And then if that observable chain would be observed by a presenter and the presenter would be having view holder from your recycler view as view, there it would make perfect sense to display directly and update the view directly from there instead going from the view holder to the adapter to the activity or fragment and then to disk presenter. So that's also something, I guess, with the lack of experience. So why should we always use or see the whole screen as one view and as one controller or presenter or view model? And as already said, the other one has no experience with Android development, but the same principles applies mainly everywhere in all GUI-related areas. And he has understood this, and I've tried other developers teach that, experienced Android developers, but they really didn't get to this point yet, I would say.
Let's say you have a screen with a registration form, for example, two fields, username, password, and some buttons. How many presenters would you add to that? Because I'd use one.
Yeah, for that one, I would also use one. That is one, I would say, logic component, view component for me, so that's one view and it deserves one presenter. Mm-hmm. But there might be, for instance, an inbox screen. Okay. And if you have this inbox screen on a tablet, you might have a master detail view or something
right,
like that.
Right, yeah.
And then you would have one fragment or one view group for the inbox and one for the detail screen, which displays the selected email. And there they would have two presenters. You wouldn't have one. You would have one for the inbox, you would have one for the detail screen.
Okay.
And if you add a search field on the toolbar, then you might have a presenter just for that. What is it called? Search view? Is it called search view? Yeah, I guess it's called search view in the toolbar. Usually I implement it myself somehow.
Yeah, me too.
It's a little bit strange to me. But yeah, then this search view might also have its own, or can be seen as its own view because it has its own state. It may display a progress bar somewhere in the text field or beneath where the display gets displayed. And so it deserves its own presenter. So you basically build logical view blocks all over your screen where it makes sense for you.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, I do the same. All right, let's discuss entities. Do you do them immutable or something like this?
Oh, yeah. Immutability is a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't exactly know what immutability is, you can think of being in a baseball stadium and you're sitting in the middle of a tribune. And we all know baseballs can go for hours. And you get hungry. And then you see a vendor over there staring at the stairs. But you are sitting in the middle, so you won't stand up and go over there. So you scream at that guy, at that vendor, to give you a hot dog. And what he will do is he will pass the hot dog to the first person who is sitting in your row, and that person will give it to his neighbor, and that person will give it to his next neighbor, and so on and so forth, until you get it in your hand. And you want an immutable hot dog because you don't want that someone else eats your hot dog while it's passing all this. The same is applicable with objects in software development. Especially when you work with multiple threads, you don't want that one thread is manipulating this object and another thread is manipulating the same object again afterwards. With immutability, you try to avoid that kind of things. And as you have already said, I also use auto value or auto parcel nowadays. Mm-hmm. Parcel Please was there or was built by me because those days there wasn't auto parcel already out there, or at least I wasn't aware of it. And I had the problem that I have to annotate some things to build to pass JSON and so on. And that was a little bit tricky with auto value those days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But immutability is definitely something you should spend time to read some books or some papers.
Yeah, especially with Rx, it plays. Just nice.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, my business logic mainly looks like almost every app is written in Rx Java. So I try to achieve this immutability by using auto value or auto parcel.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it also has now extensions, so you can.
Yeah, but it's in snapshot version, unfortunately.
Yeah, and with snapshot 1.2, I guess. Also, they are working on the 2.0 release, and that's definitely in.
Yeah, another reason why I don't use auto value instead of auto parcel, because because current stable version auto value is one jar that you have to compile. You can split it to kind of annotations jar and annotation processor jar. Auto value depends on Guava, which is 20k methods, so it's not an option for me. That's why I use AutoParcel. I'd say that AutoParcel gives two things. It will add parsable implementation if your class implements parsable, and it already split it to two jars. So yeah, for Android, until not released with extensions and splitted jars, I'd use AutoParcel, I guess.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and I should say that your analogy with hot dog was amazing. I know I don't want my objects dirty or eaten by somebody.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very great. Thanks a lot. So another thing I wanted to ask, because I see different opinions in the internet, do you use Rx on, let's say, model layer or only on presenter layer? Because in my practice, all my models usually return observables or rx.single as a result, so it can be easily composed by different presenters or other models. But I saw different opinions about that. Somebody, for some reason, don't want to know about rx.java at model layer. So what are your opinion about that?
I have no problems with rx.java on the model layer.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, well, my kind of software architecture or my interpretation of model view presenter is that I use the view, I use the presenter, and then downwards I use some kind of, there was the other architecture called Flux from Facebook. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they have an action, they have a dispatcher, then they have a store, and then the store gets back to the view or updates the view, or there is a controller in the view which updates then the view. And the main idea behind this Flux architecture is to have unidirectional flow of data. So basically, the action is you click on a button, then this action will be submitted to a dispatcher. Then the dispatcher will forward this event to the right store, which could be a HTTP request, could be a database.
Mm-hmm.
And then the store notifies the controller that data has been updated and should now display. And I take this principle and apply it to my business logic by using RxJava, because I think all that kind of things are more easier with RxJava.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a quite interesting, I would say, library called Cycle.js for the web.
Yeah, right.
Which basically uses that kind of thing. It uses the idea of unidirectional data flow. Yeah, build some kind of circle from beginning a user action until it gets updated. So it's a one unidirectional way of data flow. And I'll apply that principle to my business logic downwards. So I use RxJava I use retrofit with RxJava to make an HTTP call. Then I use some databases to merge the result together or some memory cache. But the thing is that here we have this unidirectional data flow because it makes things so much easier. And for me, RxJava is not a framework, it's a library. So
Right. Therefore,
I don't see problems by using it on the business layer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Another thing I wanted to ask is, do your presenters know about, let's say, Android components? Because also in the internet, there are several opinions about that, and you probably may even have separate Gradle model which doesn't know about Android at all and will contain business logic, probably presenters and so on. I'm usually not a fan of such things, but of course I don't share knowledge about Android too much to my presenters or models, but I mean, it's Android app and its business logic includes working with Android features like databases or maybe device capabilities or something. Of course, you should hype with your own classes just to be able to control that better, but at the same time, I don't feel that I'm getting some kind of dirty because of that. Also, I should say that my presenters don't know about Android main thread, because I think that it's responsibility of the view to know on what thread it should work. So usually my presenters just invokes view methods on any thread, and view detects that thread and redirect to main if it needs. That's how I do it. How you do it?
mainly the same way, but with some slightly difference regarding the threading. But in general, yes, the presenter has absolutely no knowledge or no Android.something package in the imports. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a context. It doesn't have a reference to, yeah, I don't know what else, to the database directly. Mm-hmm. So I use mainly Dagger to inject Interactor or the model or business model, mm-hmm, or business logic or whatever, domain model, whatever you want to call it, as constructor parameter.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, then behind the curtains, if you work with a database, yeah, you need a context, but the context is not given to the presenter, and the presenter is not instantiating the database SQLite Open Helper by using a context. So that's already done somewhere in the Dagger module, and the presenter just get the object. And usually I also hide this behind the interface so that I can swap it. As already said before, I want my components to act or be like human cells. I want to replace them. For instance, we all know that Buzz has been shut down by Facebook.
And yeah.
If you think about cells and Buzz would be just like a single cell, you could replace it with another cell, for instance, Firebase or something else.
Yeah, and unfortunately, somebody used Buzz as skeleton of whole app.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
don't do that, yeah. That's what it's MVP about, or not only MVP, software architecture in general, to separate your concerns, to make things exchangeable, decoupled, and so on and so forth. And regarding the threading thing, from my experience, it's better, at least when working with MostB, that everything comes back to the presenter, works on the main UI thread. Because then it's easier to retain the presenter during screen orientation changes, and you can't get in a situation where the presenter gets the result during a screen orientation change, because then the view wouldn't be attached or somehow not reattached, and then you may lose the response or the result of an HTTP request, for instance. So therefore, I don't let the presenter directly know about main thread and others, thread pools, mm-hmm, but what I do is I pass the presenter transformer. And this transformer, mm-hmm, is the last thing that will be applied to my RxJava chain. And in this transformer, I basically say observe on or subscribe on. And I do that also with Dagger and dependency injection. And the nice thing about that is that during unit tests, I simply replace that with something that runs synchronously. So mm-hmm, a bit of synchronized transformer, kind of.
Yeah, with scheduling, I do the same thing. I just forgot to mention, a presenter accepts its dependencies via constructor, mm-hmm, just to make it easier to test. And in a constructor, I accept only models. And for example, if presenter needs a kind of value like, let's say, account ID or user ID or whatever, message ID if it displays message, I extract such things into a class, immutable class, presenter config, usually I call that. And in presenter config, I usually have a property called IO scheduler, which is basically, usually in real app, it's schedulers.io from RxJava, but in tests, it's usually schedulers.immediate or schedulers trampoline to run the code synchronously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I divide business logic and parameters needed to presenter instance. How do you do it?
Well, I haven't had such a scenario where I have a really config or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's just enough to pass that kind of transformer or that scheduler thing as constructor parameter to the presenter. But otherwise, I would say it makes sense if you have a lot more. What kind of config do you have in your presenters?
So let's say I have a presenter that displays, for example, news article, and that news article has an ID, and presenter needs to work on some scheduler to load that article, and maybe it will have another parameters like amount of data that it should load.
I see.
Or some timeouts that it needs to handle or something like this. So I usually extract such thing into presenter config, and the thing I like in such pattern, I guess, is that I use AutoParcel for that, and I have nice fluent builder for config, and in tests it's very readable and so on. So makes sense for me, at least.
Yeah, I would say it makes sense anyway, because I'm not sure how do you parcel this state or this config then? So your presenter has get the bundle somewhere when the view gets destroyed and saves this config into this bundle?
It's parsable, but usually I save such parameters at view layer. This is another thing to discuss. So my presenters, only one presenter I wrote had unsafe instance state. Another didn't have any. And the reason for that is that I usually don't rebind same presenter to the view after, for example, orientation change, because I don't want to have a situation when during the orientation presenter received new data and it probably couldn't notify view about that at the moment and it has to persist it somewhere. So I usually try to make my presenters stateless. Functional programming style allows me to remove state almost from maybe 90% of places, I guess, in presenters. And that thing I like in my MVP styles, my presenters don't have state, I guess. So if, for example, article view needs to display an article, it has article ID as parameter in the view. And then when view needs to bin the presenter, it creates the config of the presenter and passes that ID, and it's immutable. If I need to display another article, for example, in the same view, just to reuse the view and do it efficiently, I'll recreate the presenter, and presenter won't even have a situation when it started to load one article, but then view decided to display another one, and at the same time, old article arrives from the network or something, and I have to have some code which will detect that and prevent and so on. So that's how I do it. And that's why I have presenter config and why it's immutable. And if I have to save it somewhere, probably I'll just add implements parsable and will save that presenter config, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense, I guess, but I do it slightly differently. As already said, I ensure that everything runs from the presenter runs on the main thread, so I can't run in this situation, as you have said, that the view is not attached or is in the screen configuration change while the presenter gets the result. So that's one thing. And the other thing, I don't have a screen config to store the ID parameters, is that, for instance, the news article details ID, is that they were already stored in the view's intent. So basically, I have duplicated that one. And it that's the reason why I don't do it. I already have that information. What I do is basically, I pass that ID as the ID to the presenter method I call, usually. Mm. But typically, or at least in most bit works that way. The view gets binded in the onCreate, attached to the presenter. So the presenter gets instantiated if it's not already there. Then if it's created for the first time, then I call something like presenter.loadNewsArticle and pass the ID. Mm-hmm. And that's basically how I do it. Do not make this duplication step. But from my point of view, it's completely fine. So it's just nitpicking or something like that from my side. Sorry for that. But I think it's completely fine to use a config. But one thing I should also think it's worth to add here is that the presenter should definitely not have any lifecycle events in there. Because
definitely, yeah. Only bin view and unbin view.
That's
usually enough.
Yeah, I call it attach view and detach view. But that's definitely enough. And that's why fragments also works for me, because what's the benefit of using views like frame layout instead of fragments? You mainly use that because of the complex life cycle that fragments has, right? And in views, you basically only have on attach to window and on detach to window from window.
There are actually a bunch of other methods, but yeah, usually you are fine with on attach view and on detach.
Yeah, usually you are fine with them. And that's I would say exactly the same thing from presenter point of view. You have this bind or attach view to the presenter, and and then I treat the fragments just like views, and I really, really have rare problems or strange error stack traces where fragments is doing something when it's not attached to the activity or something like that.
Yeah, in my experience, I use fragments in the same way. So I just override minimal needed callbacks I need for the presenter and then work with it as a simple proxy for the view. But I should say that sometimes, once a month or something like this, I'll have a problem with Fragment Manager because, hell yeah, so much states. It's just blow up sometimes. But
yeah, I think fragments in general are a good idea or a good concept to have this
Implementation, I guess.
But the implementation is not perfect.
I actually not happy to use directly views because view class exposes so much methods about drawing and something that I just don't want to see in a component that displays, for example, let's say list, why it should have on measure or something. I would rather prefer something more clean, something like fragment, which will proxy the view. Actually, I'm very slowly working on such framework to replace, I'd not call it framework, just library, to replace fragments. Because, idea is really great, but implementation is not. And building app with, let's say, one activity and only fragments is really hard because Fragment Manager adds so much complexity to it.
Yeah.
But this is probably the future I'd like to see in Android app architectures. I don't really think that we need many activities.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are no really good reasons for that. It's only add complexity with activity backstacks and so on. Because when you control that in your code, you have much more privileges, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess in future, we will all sit on some library which will replace fragments and give you better control to build apps in one activity, I guess.
I would love to see something like that too. So to sum it up, I would say that we agree that fragments are not ideally, but the idea behind it is good. And if you know how to use it or how to deal with them, you should.
Right. Yeah, just work with them for about 3 years, I guess, and you'll be fine with them.
Yeah. So basically what my view layer in MVP looks like is I have the fragment, which is mainly exclusively responsible for lifecycle events. Then I have controllers, which are click listeners and so on and so forth, like the original model view controller intention was. And then I have the view, which was inflated from XML. So that's basically my view. And it works so far quite good with fragments too. But I think the main reason why is because I see fragments as view and do nothing strange in the on create or on destroy or something in between or switching the state from different threads and so on and so forth.
Okay, I guess we did it. We discussed architecture. If you want to add something, please do. The one thing we could discuss about architecture, Android services, how you treat them, maybe you don't even use them. And the thing I see in different apps, if app needs some background logic, all the code will be placed in some service. That's totally incorrectly in my mind. because I'd use same models and same business logic I use in other parts of app.
Yeah.
And service will be just some kind of entry point for that, just like activity or fragment.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you don't need to put all the code there that needs some background logic or something.
Yeah, I agree. So I rarely use services, but I can say that there is no need for services. So services are... Well, the nice thing about services is that they have their own life cycle. So you are not tied to the activity or to the fragment. If you have to ensure that something really runs one and runs for sure, then services is the way to go, I would say.
Yeah, so it's just a way to tell the system that apps needs to do.
Yeah, exactly. Better. Nothing. And services are, for me, the business logic. So I use services also in MVP. For instance, if I have a sign-up screen to register a new user, then I would have the view, the presenter, and the presenter then talks to the service. The Android service would ensure that this call would be passed, for instance, with an exponential backoff or something like that. So that's the service who will do that kind of thing in my apps, because I really want to ensure that it really works.
I don't do that because the last time I did something like this, I was using RoboSpice, I guess, and it added so much complexity in talking between different layers of the app. I really don't see much need in services in current apps. Usually I just use them as, let's say, invoke that service from an alarm manager or something like this, and it'll just start some business logic or something. But for example, let's say you have a sign-up screen and user clicks register. I wouldn't send an intent or bind to a real service to send that request to the network because I don't need such complexity in the chain. I just start user model.register, which will go is a retrofit or something. So
yeah. No, in general, I think you are right. I rarely use services, but when I use them, I ensure that this unidirectional flow doesn't get interrupted. So basically, to register a new user, I would say the presenter stores the user in the database and then starts the service.
Mm-hmm.
And the service reads the data from the database and uploads it to your server to sign up the user. And then as the result comes, it deletes from the database. And then by using RxJava and good database implementation like Store.io or SQLite, mm-hmm. then it would automatically trigger update and you get the immutable new data from the database upwards to the presenter. So that's what I mean with unidirectional data flow.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Cool.
Looks good to me. Okay, so I guess the last thing about architecture is it's probably not directly related to architecture, but when you test your code, you have to design it in a such way that it will be testable. Usually for me, it means that class accepts its dependencies via constructor or probably fields. Usually I don't test fragments even with Roblectic. I leave that for functional UI tests, but I test presenters, models, and even entities for example, JSON parsing and serialization, because sometimes you can have some weird bugs when you update a JSON library. I'd say that when you'll start testing, you'll change your opinion about designing, let's say, presenters or models.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So do you test fragments, let's say, via Roblectic or?
No, not really. No? But actually, okay. I don't do UI tests. I don't use Espresso.
Oh, you don't believe in that. Yeah, I remember.
It's not that I don't believe in that, but my views are just so stupid simple. There's no complexity in I can
well,
basically
yeah, that's
don't
wrong.
Do much wrong. But I know you have another opinion. But I really ensure that from presenter downwards, everything is tested. So also the presenter is that kind of gateway to my view, and it passes that presentation model I have already said before. And there's basically all information all in their presentation model the view has to know. So basically the view just have to say textView.setText presentationModel.getText. And that's basically all the view has to do.
Right. But the reason why I cover, let's say, UI with functional tests is that because even in textView.setText, I can make a mistake and I would like to check that automatically, at least that app doesn't crash or, of course, that it displays information correctly. And yeah, I agree that views are really stupid with MPP. They're basically passive. They just receive callbacks. Not even callbacks, I'd say, is it just presenter invokes its methods and view displays data, pass it from presenter. But I'd say that integration of different views and screens may give a really weird box. So that's why I do functional tests and not only unit or integrational. But actually, we wanted to do a separate episode about testing. I guess we'll discuss many things later, but...
Makes sense, yes.
Yeah, basically, I think we covered that.
Yeah. I just have to add a little thing about the presentation model because I can't highlight how important such thing is. For instance, if you have a recycler view, then in the recycler view, you get these cool new things like item animations and so on and so forth. If you use Model View Presenter, most of the time you get a new immutable list and then you call notify dataset changed
mm-hmm.
on the adapter of the recycler view. And there's basically no animation running if you have added some items or moved some items around.
Yeah, right.
And what I do is I use the presentation model. In the presentation model, when I get the data from RxJava from my business logic, mm-hmm. I apply a function that basically a map operator that creates this presentation model. And in this presentation model function, I create a list of comments. So I make a difference, the diff
mm-hmm.
between the previous list and the current list that is now coming to get displayed. Then I generate some comments. I call it adapter comments. And this adapter comments are basically the comment patterns. So there are a list of comments in there.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, hey, I have inserted the item at this position. And so the adapter has to call, notify item inserted, and then the item position. And with all this complexity in the presenter, I will pass that to the view, and then the view simply runs that commands and to get these animations done. And I use that kind of things quite often in the presentation model, and that's the reason how I move all the complexity from interacting or doing some animations to the presenter, kind of. I'm not using too much tests or spend too much time to make tests on the view level.
By the way, that's one of the reasons why I don't think that I will use android.content.cursor, which is actually a result from database, because you can't calculate any kind of diff between old data and new data. You can't work with the cursor from multiple threads. So that's the reason why I convert result of the database request into immutable list. And by the way, there is a great library for immutable collections called Solid from Conmic. Mm-hmm. I really suggest you to try it. It's also parsable already. So if your entities are parsable, it will store whole list or set or map as parsable too. And it's immutable. That's really great. Okay, so guess we have to finish this episode. Yeah. So, short news this week. Dagger 2 gets official documentation update and also a document about testing, and the first paragraph called "Don't use Dagger for unit testing," which is really great. Definitely check that out. We'll add the links. If you have something to add, Hannes, please do.
No, probably just a short information. We now get almost or close to a release of Android Studio 2.0.
All right, yeah.
As I'm an active annotation processor fan. There's a tiny issue with the incremental built-in Gradle because...
Well, it's not tiny, I guess, because I have to stay on Android Gradle plugin 1.5.0 because of annotation processing just doesn't work on incremental compilation for me.
Yeah, exactly. So the problem is with incremental builds, the annotation processor will only scan those files which are going to be compiled. And those are just those files you have touched since the last incremental build. And therefore, things like Dagger, which requires to scan the whole project for all annotations, doesn't work anymore. Yeah, the workaround is to turn off incremental builds. So simply disable it and you should find it. But I'm not sure if there's an option regarding performance. But yeah, just to let you know.
Yeah, but you, of course, can still use new Android Studio version with old stable Android Gradle plugin. That's how we do. So thank you very much, Hannes.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be your first, and a pleasure and an honor to be your first guest in the show in the context, and hope to see more episodes soon.
Yeah, sure. Just as addition, we discussed with Hannes how to manage podcast website. And because I'm kind of lazy person, I don't want to manage hosting, do some HTML and CSS stuff. It's not for me. So we decided to try GitHub as podcast website, actually, because it already has comments, releases, where you can just attach binary file like .mp3 with the podcast. It has version control. So I think we will just release show notes as .md file with markdown in it. And you can, of course, do pull requests and improve that. The only issue I guess we'll have with the GitHub is that GitHub comments doesn't have any voting. So I unfortunately expect +1, +1, +1. Please don't do that too much. It really blows up any email client and so on. And by the way, feel free to follow that repository to join some discussions. And I think we will create something like an issue per episode to discuss things before maybe new episode and after. So, and also you can reply to the comments via email, actually. It's very convenient. Yeah, that's how we go. I guess I'll publish the link in Twitter or somewhere. I'll also publish links to Hannes' open source projects and to his profiles in Twitter and GitHub. So definitely follow him. He's a nice guy.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Hannes. And
thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.